Okay, it's 6 o'clock and I'd like to call the meeting to order, regular agenda Tuesday, October 1st. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance and an acknowledgement. Pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The land acknowledgement of the mission statement. On behalf of South Tucson residents, we honor the tribal nations who have served as caretakers of the land from time immemorial and respectfully acknowledge the ancestral homeland of the Tohono O'odham Nation and the multi-millennial presence of the Basquiaki tribe within South Tucson, consistent with the City of South Tucson commitment to diversity and inclusion. We strive towards building an equal partnership relationship with the Arizona's tribal nations.
The mission of the City of South Tucson is to build up our community through mutual cooperation between we, your public servants, and you, our citizens, so that jointly we can build a safer and stronger city. Amen.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Lovitz.
Here.
Acting Mayor Rogers.
Here.
Councilwoman Romero, a call to excuse Mayor, and Councilor Aquino is running late. Mayor Diaz?
Here.
Councilor Floyd?
Here.
Councilor Valenzuela?
Here.
Okay. Thank you. We do have a quorum. So the next item is the approval of minutes on the regular meeting, September 17. Are there any corrections, additions to those minutes?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to approve that we approve the minutes for September 17th.
Need a second?
Second.
It's been moved in second. Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Lovitz?
Yes.
Acting Mayor Rogers?
Aye.
Mayor Diaz?
Yes.
Councilor Flagg?
Yes.
Councilor
Valenzuela?
Yes.
Okay. So the next item is call to the public. To accommodate all those who wish to address the City Council and to facilitate the expeditious consideration of the agenda, it is requested that each person wishing to address the Mayor and Common Council under an agenda item limit his or her comments to a maximum of 3 minutes. Would anybody in the audience like to address the Council? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to the next item, Mayor and Council members, report of current events. Is there anybody in the Council that would like to report on current events? Or
Mr. Mayor, I've got a couple of things. Okay, the CAP is having a dinner at the Desert Diamond Casino on October 9th from 6 to 8. And this is just trying to get things going all over again. On the 11th, there's a meeting at Air Base at 8 o'clock. On the 12th, I got that celebration for the Indigenous People Day. On the 13th, I got an International Day of the Girl, and there's a celebration at the library from 10:30 to 1:30. And last but not least, on the 27th, we have Cyclovia from 93.
Was that first one Central Arizona Project?
Yeah, CAP.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay. Is there any more? No? No? How about future agenda items? I have none. So item number 7 is the City Manager Department Heads report to Mayor and Council.
I do have a report, Mayor, and if I haven't said it, I'll say it again. The swearing in of the newly elected council is November 19th. So we will have three members that will be new to the council. And Mr. Diaz will come back and we will appoint a new mayor and a new vice mayor and possibly an acting mayor. So November 19th, we'll have a new mayor.
Okay, thank you. Any more? No? Okay, item number 8 is the direction discussion to apply for available grant funds to build up community capacity relating to environmental, climate, justice matter, and help improve governance and community engagement.
Mayor, Planning Director Mosuelli said I will report on the next 2 items.
Mayor and Council, thank you for this time. We've got 2 applications that we've been working on here on the planning side with the community and some nonprofits. The first one is, if you've been somewhat talking to some nonprofits in the region, they're all the buzz right now in the grants world right now. It's the Environmental Protection Agency, Environmental and Climate Justice Community Change Grant. We're applying under Track 2, which is more on the social, community building, governance side. So it's more of a social/planning grant. The idea with this grant is to try to build up community capacity and engagement in addressing environmental issues, environmental and climate issues in our community. As you may already know, there's several here in the city of South Tucson. So we've got some to pick from. We haven't exactly tied it down with the community where what the exact ask is going to be as far as environmental-wise. But the whole idea here is to try to get some funds to help mobilize some folks to build up that capacity to help foster more engagement from the community level up to the governing body, which would be, you know, city and council and so on.
Do you have any specific examples of things that you've thought about or what's in there?
So some of the potential projects that come out of this would be like something like maybe a citizens advisory board. It could be something where it's a workshop training program where we're educating folks on environmental issues, you know, and basically help drive decisions and resources to the community to address those issues. That's basically it, yeah. It's about literally trying to build up that community capacity, you know, and engagement, empowerment from the local level, grassroots level, sorry.
So as far as the direction, what would you like to hear from us?
Just consensus that we have your go-ahead to continue with this grant application.
Write them grants. Brownfields too, right?
Yeah, okay, cool. So yeah. That's for 9 too, okay.
Yeah. Okay, wait a minute. So... we're not having a motion, so we're kind of saying that this is more of a mutual agreement between us. Or
write them grants, bro.
Sure. Sounds good.
Can we take that for number 9 too then? Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, sounds good.
Make sure that...
Yes.
Can you talk more about the brownfield, so?
Yeah.
Would that be like so that developers, how does that interact with developers coming in and wanting to deal with some of our more infamous properties?
So the brownfields grant is not it's Environmental Protection Agency, but this is more of an assistance to property owners with site assessments, environmental. So let me give you an example. And it's more geared for local mom and pop types functions, not your big developers, although they can benefit from them too.
Okay.
But the idea is, I'll give you an example. Let's just say you have a small company that wants to relocate to South Tucson. They find a site. The building was built in 1950s. The bank says, hey, we need this. Before we loan you money to buy this property,
right,
you need to do an environmental site assessment. So then they could come to the city and receive this technical report. The city would fund it, and it would basically conduct a phase 1 report, which is basically a historical search on the property, and what type of uses have happened on that site. If, like, let's just say if there's a, if it was a mechanical shop or a laundromat or something of that sort, it would warrant additional investigation, and we would conduct a phase two where they actually come out and do sampling. So they do paint sampling, ground sampling, soil sampling, that type of stuff. So there's no cleanup or anything required, there's no enforcement, but it's literally just a report to take to the bank and say, hey, you know, this property is okay for you to provide funding for.
I was going to say that we've applied for this multiple times, right? Like, this is not a new grant.
Right.
Yes.
I know that we've been benefactors of some of those grants for Brownfields.
Yeah. But who uses them, Josue? Like we've, the city have secured that grant numerous times. How has it been used?
I'll give you some examples. Some of the bigger properties that have received one, Tucson Greyhound Park has received one.
So in recent years?
Yeah, in recent years.
Like one year ago or two years ago?
Yeah, with this with the current grant that we have right now, yeah. Okay. That we're closing out, as a matter of fact, yeah. So this is good and bad, but the good thing is that it allows you to know what's there. So then it, you know, just puts the onus on the property owners to make sure that they do what's right whenever it comes to them revitalizing that property. They're making repairs and so on. You know, and it has some type of environmental concern, there's laws that need to be followed. So then it gives a heads up to the local government, too. It's a resource.
Thank you.
You know, one other thing, the very northern border of South Tucson around 10th Avenue, the city's planning to do hundreds of units of housing. And when pressed by the community up there, they're never... They always say, we don't have any specifics on it, you know. So a woman who's been active in environmental issues on the South Side for years named Linda Robles went to this one meeting with the city and yelled and screamed. She didn't yell and scream, but she really brought up the fact that there needs to be an environmental impact report done on that property. I should have done this in the current event thing. So that's like an ongoing thing where people are mobilized there, and it's a similar issue to Brownfields. And so tomorrow night at 5:30 at the Santa Rosa Center, which is like where the Connie Chambers projects used to be, the gym there, the city's gonna like talk about the environmental impact that the Terracon and SOMAS,
okay,
these two companies, has done. So they're going to talk about that to the community. Mm-hmm. So I assume that ain't Brownfields, but it's a similar thing. And it's great that on our northern border, people are woke up.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And just to add to that, for what it was worth, you know, so the term Brownfield literally just means any site that has a past use, you know, so it's not as opposed to a green space, like a green pasture that's never been developed.
Yeah.
So. And the term, you know, it's seen negative, but it's not necessarily a negative thing, you know. That's what these reports sometimes are help clarify, you know, whether the property's clean or not. So it's just because it's a brownfield doesn't mean it's a bad property.
But, you know, I've talked to people over the years who insist that it would be really, really, really hard to mitigate places like the junkyards over here off of 3rd Avenue, between 3rd and 4th, because it's just like for decades it's been chemicals going into the property. So, you know.
It'd be nice to get in there and do some testing, yeah.
Well, if there's going to be development there or anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. That's so good.
If I may, Mayor, Councilor Flagg and Clubfoot, I'm having some thoughts about what you mentioned, Councilor Flagg and Clubfoot. So, for example, using Councilmember Flagg used an example with what's going on at the city of Tucson. So the development that's taking place there, it was a former, I believe, like a refuse transfer station. So because that is not, that property has already been, you know, used for the purposes, brownfields would not be able to, money would not be able to be used for that particular property.
I believe, as an example. City of Tucson would be able to use their own brownfield grants.
Yeah, exactly.
But South Tucson would be,
So for that purpose, you could.
Yes.
I understood that if the property had to have never been used.
No, yeah.
It would qualify, but if there was a former type of activity there for like, if they.
Yeah.
Whatever, right, the transfer center.
Yeah, it could be used pretty much for any property in South Tucson where it's been vacant. See, that's what the phase one does, it does a historical record search. Because just because the property doesn't have anything developed on it currently, or there's no signs that a structure's been there, sometime a historical search will prove that there has been a structure there maybe 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's what that investigation does. So any site in South Tucson would be eligible for brownfields funding. And the whole idea is try to keep the property in reuse, you know, property taxes, you know, jobs, employment, you know, people living there. That's the whole idea.
Okay, so we're back to direction as far as the consensus. Is that grant concession? Yes?
Yes.
Yes?
Aye.
Sounds good, thank you.
So you have a consensus. Okay, so item number 10, preservation, neighborhood preservation ordinance.
Okay, Mayor Council, you have the slides in front of you, unfortunately. The technology to put it up there, it wasn't working today, but it sounds like there was enough copies for the audience and the council. So I'm gonna go through these slides sort of fairly quickly because I don't read slides, they're there for you. But the way this presentation works is I went from broad general powers under state law to more specific powers under state law to the city's neighborhood preservation code. So the bottom line of all this is that the city does have authority and power to deal with slum conditions in sort of the interior of or the living conditions, I guess, of rental units. Before, as you recall, we talked about sort of a broader concept of code enforcement. Typically, that's the exterior of the property so that, you know, people keep their property well-maintained so it's not create a nuisance, visual nuisance or other type of nuisance for neighbors. This discussion is about dealing with the conditions really inside the building or affecting the livability of the building. So the broad general powers are laid out on the first two slides. That basically cities and towns have authority to define nuisance and abate nuisance.
May I interrupt just for a second? I'd like the record to reflect that council member Aguirre is present now.
And that's what we're sort of dealing with in this situation. Sort of a much more localized nuisance in terms of looking at rental units. The state also gives cities and towns the authority to do residential rental inspection program. So I think the broad point of that is you have to sort of establish a program across the board. We're not looking to use this to target any particular property. I think we have to come up with some sort of program that where city staff can react to complaints or requests, whether from residents or others who may see sort of health and safety conditions as not being met for residents of rental, primarily rental property. So, and the reason I bring that up is that, you know, as we roll into a new budget plan, starting probably in January with the new council, you know, the budget is really your opportunity to prioritize on how you're going to spend the city general fund and other money. And so, you know, this type of inspection program is probably has a pretty high demand on staff or to have staff people do this, if you decide to go down this route. It may be, I don't know if necessarily it's a full-time job in and of itself, but it takes a certain, it takes a person with the right kind of experience, training, knowledge, and temperament to do this kind of program. You know, do it objectively, and so it's sort of a code enforcement job, but it's also has some building official type knowledge or experience as well. So either, you know, this inspection program either allows the city to inspect the interior of a building on a complaint or request of the resident or an owner, I suppose, or if the city, if that code person or that inspector from an exterior look at the property has concerns that it's affecting the livability of the inside. So for instance, if there are boarded up windows, if there are, it doesn't appear that there are air conditioning units running, if there are other external indicators of potential slum property, then that code enforcement person can undertake an inspection with either the permission of the tenant, permission of the landlord, or what's called an administrative warrant, which is sort of akin to a search warrant, but it's sort of a lesser standard to get an administrative warrant, but you also aren't looking for criminal activity. You're literally looking to get in and inspect the property. So it's primarily for conditions that materially affect the health and safety of the occupants. So that's what we're talking about here. There's a list of what are conditions that materially affect the health and safety of occupants. And like I said, I'm not going to read these to you, but they're sort of common sense issues. You know, not enough water, no heat, no, bathrooms aren't working, ventilation isn't working, broken windows, broken doors, no locks on doors for people's safety. The next slide, which is slide 6, there's an additional natural light or lack of natural light and ventilation required by the building code. So that's why, you know, the staff people or person that does this have to have some understanding of the building code. You know, room and space dimensions as required by the building code. So for instance, typically a building code will require for a bedroom at least 50 square feet per person. Most bedrooms, you know, just other than maybe the master bedroom, it are usually 10 by 10, 12 by 12, so you have 100 to 144 feet. And so typically building codes say that has a two-person occupancy. Now, we all know that if with families with you know, a lot of kids, they may put two bunk beds in. But when it comes to, you know, renters, that is sort of a different standard, I guess, in that. You know, if there's infestation, sewage disposal, garbage and rubbish, you know, removal. So are there big, you know, commercial bins out there? Do they get picked up regularly? That kind of thing. There are other, under the statute, there are other conditions that affect the health and safety of occupants. Basically, hazards under the building code, structural, wiring, plumbing, mechanical equipment. So if things look like they're sort of falling apart, that could be a reason for inspection. Failure to have those kinds of mechanical, structural, electrical, plumbing meet the building code, or it's not maintained, things are broken, that could trigger an inspection. Weather protection, you know, are the windows sealed? Are there fire hazards? Are, you know, what kind of materials are used for repairs primarily? Not being, the property not being maintained, exits, egress, and ingress and egress. So for instance, the building code and the fire code don't allow for windows to be painted shut, for instance. Because if there's a door to one door, let's say it's an apartment, and there's one door and the windows are painted shut, If the fire blocks the ability to get out the door, the window's the second option. So if it's painted shut, it creates problems. So those are the kinds of things. So if these things are observed or seen or known, it allows for the city to then proceed on inspections. Also, you know, high crimes, building a history of documented building code violations. If the city is using its code enforcement or building official enforcement to get the owner to comply with building code, consistent or constant violations of the building code, whether it's repairs or maintenance, those things have to be done by the building code. That could trigger an inspection. So, like I said, there's a lot of things that could trigger an inspection. You know, probable cause. You know, again, this is to get the administrative warrant that the building isn't in compliance with the building code. Which means, Chief, how do you define probable cause?
Well, you have circumstances where lead you to believe that a crime has been committed and that the person you're looking at is the person who committed the crime.
So in this case, it would be that you have reasonable belief, given the totality of circumstances, that the owner is violating the building code on a regular basis, doing repairs, maintenance, those kinds of things. Or if you get a complaint from a resident, owner, agent, then you can do an inspection. The town can charge fees for this, not the first time there's an inspection, but if there's corrective order given, and the corrections aren't done, then the town can charge fees for subsequent inspections. Can't charge fees, in other words, you can't charge fees for the regular inspections you would do to see if the corrections are being done per the building code. That's sort of a standard, you know, you basically get a building permit, that fee covers all of your plan review and your inspections. But if you know, it comes back that the owner who gets the notice to correct hasn't done the corrections, then subsequent inspections for that purpose to determine you can charge a fee. So that's something to think about as part of this program, is to adopt a fee for second, third, fourth, and it can sort of graduate. The more times you have to go out, the higher the fee. There has to be you know, adequate notice. At least 15 days. We typically give 30 on code enforcement cases to comply with whatever code is being violated. Unless there's sort of some emergency, you know, if something is a true fire hazard, then if it's really a health and safety emergency, then you can get around that 15 day and get the correction done right away if it's an imminent threat to health and safety. So that's the state law. So we just talked about, and like I said, that's something that it's a program. So you want to have standards. You want to have staff. You want to set fees. So it's not something we could just implement, you know, tomorrow. I think we would have to sort of create the program and get the staffing and provide the budget and cost and all that. Then we get to the city code under Article 3 of the neighborhood preservation. And it defines slum property as a residential rental property that has deteriorated or is in a state of disrepair, and then it manifests one or more of the following conditions that are a danger to health and safety of the public. And this is the 12 slides. And I didn't number the slides, but it's on the 12th page. So here are the things that would meet the definition of, under city code, of slum property. Structurally unsound, roofs, surfaces, walls, doors, stairwells, railings, lack of potable water, adequate sanitation facilities, adequate water and waste pipe connections, hazardous electrical systems or gas connections, lack of safe rapid egress, and then accumulations of waste in various forms, drug paraphernalia. So those are all, if that exists at a property, the city can define it as a slum property. And residential rental property is just, the definition is just what it means. It's property that's used, you know, leased or rented for residential purposes. So it doesn't apply to commercial purposes, doesn't apply to hotels, motels, those kinds of things. So again, this, the city code, like the state law.
John, can you repeat that last sentence?
What did I say?
You were saying that.
It doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply to motels.
It applies to residential uses, and residential uses are typically uses where the person resides there for 30 days, more than 30 days, or 30 days at a time.
Got it.
So it doesn't apply to your traditional hotel, motel, or some sort of Airbnb type use, or VRBO type use, or whatever. It really just applies to, you know, what we would think of as traditional or typical residential rental properties.
Okay.
So like the state law, the city code gives the code official to authority to inspect. You need a request of the tenant if the property is occupied. If the tenant refuses to consent, then you could get an administrative warrant through the city court here or through justice court. And in addition, once a property is designated as a slum property, then you have the city code provides that you can do inspections for 3 years, three consecutive years. The way it's written, I don't believe it's once a year for 3 years. I think it's as needed, to see that the corrections are being made to take it out of that designation. Once it's defined as a slum, doesn't mean it's always going to stay defined as a slum. You know, if repairs are made and things are corrected, which is really we talked about before, we call it code enforcement, but reality it's code compliance. We simply want the properties to comply with the code. We're not in it to fine people. We only use that as to cite them, to bring them to court. That's really a last resort. The whole idea is to get people to comply. And sometimes it can be done in a month. Sometimes it takes many months. I think the philosophy that I always sort of encourage is, as long as a person's making steady progress, you know, we'll just keep monitoring, and eventually they'll get to that point. There are a host of reasons why maybe a property owner can't comply right away, whether it's cost, whether it's supply chain, or whether it's various things. So, but again, the city attempts to work with those folks. And sort of talking earlier about grants, I think there are grants out there that the city can get and then help property owners, residential property owners, fix up, maintain their houses. I don't know the specifics, but I've heard of those kinds of grants before, whether it's Arizona's, the state housing department, or whether it's grants from charitable organizations, those kinds of things. So it may be something worthwhile looking into by the grant person to do that, because anytime you can help, particularly if it's, owner-occupied, or if it's a small sort of mom-and-pop rental where they may not have enough revenue to do all the fixes that are required. If it's a big, for-profit commercial operator, I would probably be less reluctant to provide grants to those kinds of folks, because, they tend to make a lot more money than some of the small-time operators. So under the state statute and under the city code, we have this sort of combined authority to do inspections, to designate a slum property, and to take enforcement actions when it comes to sort of the interior of the building. If there is a failure to comply, the jurisdiction of any kind of citation is a city court. The maximum civil penalty, it's a civil enforcement, is $1,000 plus $100 for each month after the original violation until compliance occurs. It's not a huge sum, but if you need to use the hammer, you have one that's available. And so this also allows, this part of the code, section 740, it's slide 17, it sort of, unlike most codes, you know, enforcement codes, it usually limits it to the code enforcement officer. This allows the code official, the police department, or city attorney to enforce. So you know, that means that the police department can cite, or inspect. The code enforcement or code official can inspect, or the city attorney can bring, you know, enforcement action in city court. But remember, we also have those superior court enforcement teams as well, that if it rises to the level of a nuisance, we have some superior court jurisdiction, which is usually a little bit of a, again, heavier hammer. But primarily the jurisdictions in the city of South Tucson, city court. If a person's found responsible, they aren't found guilty in a civil citation. You know, the court can order that, the city court can order them to do whatever's necessary to correct it, fix. The failure to do that is essentially a contempt of court, which could turn into a criminal contempt if it's egregious enough. So it could turn into a criminal act if the person who's ordered by the court to take some action just doesn't do it. And I'll just up to the judge's, you know, sort of discretion whether to hold someone in civil contempt, which is essentially a fine, or criminal contempt, which could again end you up in a jail cell or some bigger fine. And then last, I repeated the last slide twice. So the last slide's repeated twice. We could delete that out, as far as that wasn't caught. So happy to discuss, that was again a very sort of big picture, quick rundown of the city's authority to deal with slum properties, meaning, you know, reiterating or repeating, meaning the interior or the exterior of the property as to how it affects the residents of the property. Whereas when we talk about more nuisance properties, it's more of how it affects the neighbors or the visual blight, things like that. So this is intended to help residential rental occupant if they're living in bad conditions.
Mr. Flank.
Yeah. So, I would say that one of the biggest issues that we have here in South Tucson, and we've attacked it, is the worst slumlord, who owns two huge properties on the south end of town. And when we sued him, we failed. And the guy's still in business. And I don't know about my colleagues, but I ain't going to take no for an answer. That guy's got to go. Because all of us have sat here and heard multiple times people that live at South 6th Avenue Suites and the Spanish Trail come in here and tell you what it's like there. And all these things that our county attorney, and by the way, that was a good, thorough explanation. I appreciate it. You know, they've made these points. Everything that he just talked about, they've talked about not having at the Spanish Trail or the South 6th Avenue Suites, windows broken, paraphernalia all over the place, the laundry room doesn't work, the toilets don't work, there isn't coolers. You know, one guy that I know, when I went to his house, he had a cooler, like a little fan, kind of like that one. And he was afraid to use it because it would increase his bill, you know. I could go on and on and on. And you've heard it. All of you have been here. So my question is, like, enough with the niceties. How do we, like, immediately jump in here and use our code to get rid of the worst slumlord, because it affects all those poor people that are in there as tenants, but we all know that significant drug and prostitution comes out of there, another dysfunction too that really drags our whole community down. It's in everybody's interest. So how do we start on this? I mean, you want to add to that, anything on that?
I do. I just I like the idea of having a residential inspection program. I wonder, and I know that our staff is already at capacity, but I wonder if we have people already on staff that can start the program. You know, because we don't want to wait 2-3 months to initiate something when we know we have the codes, we have proof, you know, that, or probable cause, sorry, to start these inspections. It's just a matter of staffing. Can we manage? Can we juggle that? Can we move on this quick?
How are we going to juggle it? How are we going to make this happen?
Right.
Because he just said we don't have the staff for it.
Well, Veronica.
Yes, Mayor and Councilor Valenzuela, as we all, I think, know by now, we currently have a vacancy in our code enforcement and building inspector position, so we have reached out to the county. They're helping us tremendously as with plan review, with inspections, for all types of permits, and business inspections that are coming through, so that has been addressed. I've been trying to strategize in terms of how do we go with the code enforcement, so I know it's a very important position. I know that the concerns of the council, so I want to make sure that we're able to either make that position something that would be overseen by the police department, and it would work kind of like in a dual role, as the attorney mentioned, that this would require the individual to possess a skill set that's not only just enforcement, but also have the ability to have knowledge with and experience definitely in inspections. So that would be a really unique specialized position that we could recruit for. But I think initially, in looking at the way operations are now, we'd have to look at the police department, which Chief and I have been in discussion. And of course, I mean, it always goes back to staffing. I hear the plea, I hear that it's a priority, so we'll continue conversations and see what we can do, but I think to prioritize the concerns as it relates to the particular properties that Councilor Flagg is mentioning, I see the need, I see the potential violations without, you know, having to get into the specifics that I'm not a subject matter expert, but we've heard the plea from the neighboring properties, from Burger King, from Food City, and I do agree that something needs to be done sooner rather than later.
That's an understatement.
Yes.
I just want to clarify, we currently have an IGA with the county, so they are acting as our like interim inspection, building
right.
inspection, right?
Building official. Well, I would say like a building official.
Okay, mm-hmm. So the current needs are being met by that now.
Right.
Okay, so maybe, well, go ahead.
If sorry. I could, Mayor. Go ahead. So I just want to make sure and understand, just because I do know I've spoken with a few developers and business owners that have been waiting on some permits and getting some inspections done.
Me too.
That is still haven't gotten completed, and I understand that. My question is, so the county is kind of taking that over and helping us with those? Am I understanding that? Because I'm sure they have a backlog, and for us to just come in and be like, hey, can you help us? So I'm sure they're not addressing stuff like...
So we have a two-phase approach, if I may, Mayor and
yes.
Councilor Aina. So in the past, when we presented with this in the past, where we have like, you know, a gap in terms of not having an inspector, so we have to, you know, make sure we have someone out in the community to, you know, conduct inspections for electrical turnouts and things like that. We reached out to the inspector at the Housing Authority. So that inspector has, of course, their limitations because they're... certification is, you know, for the Housing Authority, so but we've been able to use them temporarily to do only certain inspections, so that's being handled right now. All the other inspections I can turn over to the planning director. I don't know what's going on with what's on hold, but it's my understanding that we're getting
inspections
done.
Yeah, and I'm sure
I haven't heard of
them. I'm sure it's more of a delay and one of the people that I spoke to, they finally got a date now and stuff. So it's not like things aren't getting addressed. I just want to make sure I understand how we're addressing them as a city. Okay.
Yes.
So I'm not trying to say they're not.
I just want to make sure.
Okay.
Just make sure.
Thank you. And then the other thing is, sorry, I had another question. So looking at the administration and enforcement, it says code official, police department, and or city attorney shall. And I'm sorry, Jose. My apologies. And so, of course, right now we're lacking a code official. Correct.
Yes.
Has that position been posted? Because we do have the money in the budget, correct?
Not as of yet, because I was hoping that I could get someone in uniform and police to help, because it'll have that police presence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we haven't really come to a solution as of yet, because there's some other challenges that we're facing the police department. So I can safely assume that I'm going to have to recruit for that position, because it's very specialized.
Yes,
and of course,
yes.
Like we mentioned, it has to have, someone has to have the ability to not only do the enforcement portion,
mm-hmm.
but also have the ability to have, you know, code building inspections as well.
Right, yeah, and that's my concern, because I feel like as a team, as a city, between the city attorney, the police department, could do a lot, but I think that we do need to have somebody that technically mm-hmm. understands the code enforcement, the code part of it.
Right.
And the enforcement and how, you know, they have special skills and they have a lot of knowledge
right.
Around building code. So that would be my concern is trying to find, I feel like this is a conversation that we need to start, that we need to have more of at a future meeting. But I think that I feel like moving forward, we need to start thinking about recruiting, finding somebody to do the code official so that we can get figure out a plan and how we can use the resources that we have to start making this work.
Yeah, and our cops have enough to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just historically speaking, when the neighborhood preservation ordinance was adopted, that role was assigned to a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2017, I believe it was, mm-hmm. or 2007, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, was it 08?
I think so, yeah. Temporary.
So it's evolved into a position outside of police, mm-hmm. where we were able to merge both the code enforcement and the building inspection into one. So it was really unique.
Whatever works.
Yes.
So temporarily, we can continue using the a police officer until we recruit and find somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But as a Councilmember Ayeda said, if we could put it on the next agenda for action to recruit a building and
but
inspector.
She doesn't. She can do that without council action.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
staff
agree.
Great.
Yeah. So you want to direct staff to
start
hire someone,
recruit,
right?
Yeah, recruit a code official. Yeah, and that way we can. Yeah.
Well, then should we make a motion
no,
to put an exclamation
manager,
point on it?
The manager already has, and this is just for presentation.
Yeah.
The manager has the authority to recruit staff, so it's already there.
Right.
We don't need to have council action on it.
Yeah. I'd like to add that I guess you guys got a grant from Representative Grijalva. Yeah, I'm sorry. Councilman Bryan, Councilman Aguirre.
I didn't get nothing from him.
Valenzuela. And I think the city planner, Lucia, has presented that grant. And in that grant, there was $25,000 available for emergency house repair. And that, I believe, is administered by Pima County.
Go ahead.
Hello, everybody again. I'm not aware that it's been awarded.
Mm-hmm.
There's been talk about it, but I haven't seen any official notice either from Congressman Grijalva's office or the feds that this has been awarded. I haven't seen anything, to be honest.
And remember, the process is not technically a grant. It's a congressional appropriation. So they would have to go through, you know, and get it approved by the whole of that, or half, at least the majority of the House. So, and it's just sort of common, but, you know, given it's an election year, I don't know if they're getting a whole lot done. I don't want to say it's an easier process to get it approved, but it's a much more lengthy process because it all depends on how quickly they can vote on it in the Congress.
But anyway, I think there is that emergency house repair at the Pima County that we can apply for, or residents can apply for,
mm-hmm.
established at this time.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, so South Tucson is served by Pima County Home Repair. Yeah, but applicants would have to apply directly, or residents would have to apply directly to Pima County for that program, which I think they open and close it regularly, and they have a wait list. But we can certainly get more information and put it on our website or do flyers and send them to our residents if you'd like.
Yeah, right on. That would be great. Yeah, because we're in need here, so that would be great if we...
I just think that those grants are limited to like once in a lifetime, right? Like you can't continuously apply for more.
I believe they can help you more than once every 10 years.
Oh, 10 years, so, yeah. Okay.
And then that might have changed, but the last I know was once every 10 years.
Okay.
There's also another program, since we're on that note, that might be able to help a lot of our residents through the county also. It's called the Community Action Agency. And through that program, they have a lot of other partners that do similar types of, that fund similar type of resources where they provide emergency rental assistance, emergency utility assistance, rapid rehousing, which is basically like if you're on the brink of going into homelessness, they could, you know, provide you some funds to for you to stay in your home or a temporary rental unit of that sort. So we could certainly bring that resources here to at least present to you here and help get the word out. That's something you guys would be interested in.
Is that part of community services,
yes,
like with Andy Flagg and Dan Sullivan?
It is, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
No action by the council?
Yeah, well, how do we make this like a major priority and put a urgent on it and make it go speedy? Because like we just sat here for a long time. I mean, I'm, you know, guilty, and we haven't done jack except tried to sue them and it didn't work. So all these problems go on every day and we hear about it, and it's absolutely unacceptable. We need to put an urgent on it. How do we do that?
Well, I don't think you do. I mean, there's a process that this requires you to go through. And by the way, for the record, this purpose of this program isn't to drive anybody out of town. I would just say that. With all due respect, Councilor Flagg, it's not the purpose isn't to go after it. It's not to go after any individual, any company, any person, any particular property. And that's why I say at the beginning, it's a program to deal with slum conditions for residential renters. It's like I said before, it's really the purpose is to get compliance, because enforcement comes down to, you know, relatively small fines, if you think about $1,000, especially if it's, like I said, if it's a big operator, you know, $1,000 isn't going to really be that much of a hurt. There's also if it push comes to shove, you know, the court can order compliance, but that would take some time too, because, you know, you sort of exhausted all your other possible remedies. And then you go back to the court and say, this guy's, you know, he's been fined, it's accruing $100 a month, they're not doing anything. Now you ask for a court order to order him to do something. You know, so things aren't going to happen in a month or a week.
Well, but tell that to the residents of Spanish Trail, of South 6th Avenue, and their neighbors and business neighbors.
So if I may... Can we get a report of all the open code enforcements that are happening now? And maybe we can start doing our like inventory of what to hit up until we can create this program with an inspector.
Ask a question.
You can.
No.
Sir? Is it 1,000 per property or 1,000 per unit?
No.
It seems like it's when you, from what I'm reading and talking to Councilmember Aguirre, it seems like it's once you designate it a slum,
Yeah, so in order for a property to be designated as slum, there has to be multiple violations, correct?
Yeah. It depends on what's wrong with the particular unit.
So it's the ones that were listed that we had previously gone over. So once it's designated a slum, and if they're not correcting it, then it's the $1,000 fine plus $100 every month, correct?
Yeah,
it could be up to $1,000 plus $100 for every month that they're not in compliance. So that's per person, per property. If they own multiple properties,
it's per citation.
Per citation.
So if you were to cite, let's say there was a slum owner or slum residential owner that had 12 units, you could, in theory, cite them 12 times. Depending on the facts, let's assume every unit has something wrong with it that rises to the level of a threat to health and safety of the resident, you could cite them 12 times. The court may merge those into one case for, it's called judicial economy. But if there are 12 citations that's 12 times the work for the staff, 12 times the work for the prosecutor, because 12 cases is 12 cases. So it's really sort of a strategic, tactical decision of what to do, how to do that. When it comes to sort of external nuisance, it's usually one citation listing all of the violations. So since we haven't really done this before, we'd have to sort of think about, would we, for a single property, would you cite each individual unit in one citation with the various violations, or would you cite 60 times if there are 60 units? Again, I would, if the prosecutor does that, the court can always just consolidate them into one case. So in theory, you might be able to have 60 citations and 60, $1,000 fines, but in reality, it's hard to tell what the court's going to do.
Okay, excuse me. I need to apologize to the council in regards to letting a attendee speak during our agenda. So I apologize, but could you go ahead and identify yourself, please?
Sure, my name is Chris Dawson. I'm a resident.
Thank you. Okay.
So I wonder, this is kind of a question to all my colleagues and to you, city attorney. I'm wondering if maybe, staff's been directed already to try to fill the vacant position. That's one step we're taking. Maybe we can follow up at our next meeting. I'd like to know a little more. I think we also have, I have a few other questions that I'd like to think more about these processes and figure it out. But I think that it might be wise for us to give staff a little more direction on how we want to continue moving down this road, so that we continue bringing it up and so that the community sees that we're not just, not doing anything or just waiting.
Right on.
How do you all feel about that?
Okay, so.
So I have a motion to continue discussion at our next regular meeting with also an update on how the hiring process is going.
And a report
on what Councilor Valenzuela had mentioned earlier about any open citations currently, open violations that are happening currently in the city.
Okay. I'll second that.
Can you repeat the motion for clarification?
So I move to continue discussion.
Go ahead. Since this is a presentation, we're really not... not set up to take motions and votes. If the council wants to give direction to just put this on the next agenda for further discussion, and we hear you about what other information you like, then it's kind of like the grants. That's good enough.
Okay.
You don't have to just
vote.
Thank
you.
Yeah, and the specifics.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you. One address.
Yes.
The motion is.
There's no motion. It's just as long as we're in
direction.
Yeah, as long as.
Okay.
We just verbally agree to pursue it.
Continue.
Oh. All right.
So continue discussion.
Got it.
Okay. The Item number 11, discussion and direction regarding assistance from outside entities for EMS and fire protection.
Yes, Mayor, members of the council, as you read out loud the item, I place this item on the agenda to have the ability to ask Mayor and Council if I could get permission on your behalf to reach out to outside entities requesting assistance as Council works through the challenges facing the fire department. We too with staff daily work, you know, especially the chief, you know, daily making sure that we have at least 4 on duty per shift. This is every single day. Also, you know, we have two apparatuses, and you never know from day to day, one could, you know, just stop working or even 2. So until such time the council determines what is going to be the long-term plan, we need to be able to reach out to outside entities, see if they're able to help us with either staffing or equipment as we work through that process. So I'm asking for council consensus. If I can reach out and discuss this with other entities, it could be the tribal unit entities, it could be the fire districts that surround us to see if they could possibly maybe have a lender in terms of a vehicle or even staffing, and I would come back to Mayor Council and see what the response would be.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So good, Mayor?
Discussion?
Yeah, I feel like we could use all the help we can get. You know, I give, you know, I take my hat off to Captain Luna for all the work he does, you know, but he's got his hands full, and I think that we can really use some expertise on a lot of different aspects and different parts of the field. And yeah, I think that if I believe that there are outside entities that are willing to, not only willing to help, but are actually wanting to help, and I think that we should really go for it.
Dig it.
Mr. Mayor? I also agree with Councilman Higuera. I just think that we need to pursue and continue finding out those that can assist us throughout the whole process, not just, you know, replacing a fire truck, but through the whole process to where we're able to come up with how or what we're going to do with the fire department in the future, as well as replacing our firemen, as well as our trucks. If that's part of that process, so be it. So that's all I have.
Any more discussion? How about, I'd like to ask a question in regards to funding. I guess we do ask for some of the, I guess agencies might require some kind of funding. Are we proposing that also?
Mayor, I don't know. I mean, the first thing I'll do is ask. If it comes back in terms of a fee, then I'll let you know. I mean, I think it's worth whatever fee they charge us, not whatever, but within our budget constraints, of course, but I don't know yet. So I'm asking for permission to go have those conversations. And if they say yes, we're willing to do it at no cost. Maybe it's just a lender at no cost, or maybe it's, you know, minimum $1 fee. So I'll let you know if there's a cost associated with reaching out and them engaging and wanting to help us out. There may be a fee.
Okay, so you're...
Maybe likely, I suspect.
It's a direction would be to go ahead and proceed with discussions?
Yeah.
Okay. Consensus?
Any decision or agreement comes back to the council.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's just asking at this point.
Correct. That's just asking.
Yes. Yeah.
Consensus?
Yes. Go discuss.
Yes, discuss.
Yes.
So we do have direction as consensus. Is it? So. And item number 12, adjournment.
Consensus.
A motion.
That's for a consensus.
Second.
All in favor?
Second.
Say aye.
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 He just went to the phone, he was saying how